Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
I'm Alan Viverette, also from the UI Toolkit team.
I'm Chris Baines, technically on the DevRel team, but I kind of like side project on Toolkit team.
I love the fact that it's a side project, but actually, as far as we know, you're basically writing Toolkit code full-time.
Wow. You've just let the cat out of the bag to my DevRel manager.
Don't worry. Nobody here
He wants to do
this.
Toolkit work. He just doesn't want to work for you. I think that's basically the issue.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for connecting the dots there. Yeah. That helps a lot with my ego. I appreciate it. So if anybody's keeping score at home, we have had some guests on the show more than one time because of, you know, legal demands and you know, complicated right. situations I won't get into. In this show, not only do we have one of those people, we have two of those people. So Alan was on the show way, way back when we had really horrible mics and bad audio, talking about accessibility.
Yeah.
And Chris has been on, this is now your third time.
This is my third time. I've met the level of Dan Sandler.
We will pass that along to him. And every single time you've been on, you've been talking about support library.
Yeah, so first time was generally about the support library, and second time was about design library, if I remember right.
Oh, yeah, probably. Okay, all right. So this one is all about support library, which is what both of you do now. So a little bit of context. Maybe every Android developer knows this already, but it's worth spelling out. We have this weird naming thing with support library where we call it the support library. In fact, it is not that. It is a collection of libraries, and the docs writers make that mistake every time they write a doc about it. They talk about the support libraries. We're like, no. It's just called the support library. I know that's plural, but we don't refer to it that way. But in fact, there are two very distinct things in my mind. There's AppCompat, which is what you have spent most of your adult life.
And he's pointing at Chris when he's saying
yeah.
that.
Yes. It's my starter project. So it's now been 3 or 4 years. I had my anniversary recently. I can't remember. It's been that long.
When are you going to finish it?
Is it ever going to finish? Is the framework a framework? Is the Android framework ever finished?
Actually, is any software ever finished? This is why we inject bugs along the way, because we enjoy working on the project so much, we may as well give ourselves future work. So there's the AppCompat side, and then there's the rest of support library, which is a collection of libraries that are, you know, utilities for doing whatever, design library stuff, recycler view, drawer layout, view page, or whatever. And the support library is basically a collection of all those things. So for context, you still work on AppCompat as well as design library and other portions here and there.
Yeah.
And Alan?
I work on making sure that we're still releasing.
Okay.
And cleaning up loose ends.
Wow, that sounds really glorified. So the release engineer for support library.
I do edit a lot of Gradle files, Gradle build files.
Oh, you must love your life.
I learned Groovy. It was exciting.
leading the support library effort overall, one of the biggest pains of which right now happens to be getting the bits out there in some semblance of order.
Yeah, so it's a fair amount of work.
Yeah.
And, you mentioned how it's not one library, it's many. And I think that was one of the big recent tasks, was taking many of the larger support libraries and splitting them up. So now they're just how many actually are we up to now for support libraries?
So let's see. We split V4 up into 5 or 6 libraries just so we can clean up our dependency chain. We may end up doing that for other libraries as well. But certainly cleaning up our dependencies so that, you know, for example, if you're importing Fragment, you don't have to import the entire transition backport. It's slowly extracting some dependencies.
It was not totally ideal in that some dependencies had been created between various classes anyway. So like you're going to pull in one of the sister libraries. They're not all totally independent. Right. There is still some interdependency between some of those libraries, but it is at least now possible to pull in a subset of that functionality instead of everything.
Yeah, though realistically, if you're developing an app, you're probably pulling in most of the support libraries.
True. Although like Media Router?
Yep, maybe not Media Router. Yeah.
Although that does get pulled in. Like that Fragment V4
is that the one
depends
that adds
on
like
media.
A, is that the one that adds like anyway. The Google Cast icon to
it does other stuff as well, but yeah, it's okay. That kind of stuff. Yeah, we have a dependency issue at the moment where V4 Fragment depends on media, the new unbundled media library. And so we make everyone drag that in, even though for the majority of apps, they don't really need it. So that's an issue we have, which we need to fix.
That should be fixed very shortly.
Okay.
The media router fragment dependency, we inverted that dependency, and that should be cleaned up. If that's not in 25.1, it's soon.
Okay, so 25.1 is the most recent?
25.1 is the most recent public release.
Bug fix on top of that, or 25.1.0?
There will inevitably be a bug fix on top of that.
Okay. So how do we name these things, actually? Just make sense out of the dot naming scheme.
We have a Dart board. So the versioning for support library is major minor bug fix, where major corresponds to the SDK level. So when we come out with SDK 26 eventually, we'll have a corresponding support lib 26.0.0. We have a release cadence that is somewhat tied to framework releases. For our minor releases, this is when we're changing APIs. We may be removing APIs at a minor release. And our release cadence for that is like a maximum or a minimum 2 months historically. And then bug fixes, we try to fast follow with a minimum 2 week release cadence between bug fix releases, following up on a major or minor release.
Okay.
And do you release all the libraries then, whether or not they have any? I'm thinking recycler view. There doesn't seem like there should be any changes for that when there's a new SDK coming out.
Yeah. So we'll still bump a version. We kind of simplify things. So you mentioned that support libraries is a huge collection of libraries. We kind of simplify our release process by just doing everything as a single version, which simplifies our dependency chain. So if you have 25.1.0, it's going to be compatible, and it's only guaranteed to be compatible with other 25.1.0 support libraries. And the reason for that is we occasionally remove APIs. So we do have a deprecate remove cycle when we're changing public APIs, but you know, there's no guarantee that 24 will be binary compatible or source compatible with 25.
Plus, you have a bunch of internal APIs, right?
Yeah.
That we now actually enforce via the tools. Mm-hmm. But I guess those you don't have to go through an official cycle for, right? You could just delete them across modules.
Yeah. So we don't have clean separation between some of the internal APIs, which is something that I think we should probably clean up a little bit. It would be nice eventually to be able to release like recycler view on a faster cadence than, say, support v4 or the what is now what used to be support v4, since those are really only going to change when the platform changes.
Okay.
So we talk about v4 a bunch in platform version numbers. So one of the other big changes that happened recently, at the same time as the refactoring into the smaller sub-libraries, was the min SDK. So I love the fact that everything is called v4 because, in fact,
our min API is 9 now. So the v4 library historically was for supporting all the way down to API 4. The min API is now 9. So preferences v7 is min API 9.
App compat. All of them.
Well, it's nice that app compat wasn't in a package namespace that was like v... whatever.
It is.
What is?
V7.
Oh, no.
Design.
What design?
Design's the first one, which didn't have the SDK exposed.
So for a while, you were talking about actually dropping the V4 and V7 from the package names. You decided not to do that.
Yeah. So the motivation behind that was making life as painless as possible for developers. So if we change the package, we change the Gradle target, which means you have to go and update your build file. You have to go and basically just do a find replace over your entire project, which is a simple enough thing.
I don't think that the artifacts necessarily have to change, but I'm thinking it's more that in the code, all your import statements, right? Like that's the real job probably.
Yeah, and it could just be, maybe we can add something in Studio that will help migrate developers and we could change this. But you also end up with binary incompatibility issues. So if you depend on place services, for example, that has a dependency on support library and it needs to be binary compatible. So if the package name changes, then now your place services client jar is pointing to the wrong classes.
So I know that place services has this requirement that you cannot mix and match any place services library with any other place services library. Right? Mm-hmm. So if you're using 8.4, you have to use 8.4 globally. And in fact, if you don't, it's going to crash because they run ProGuard. So all the symbols are renamed differently for each build. So you really have to. And so we have a lint rule to enforce it. And we recently got one for the support library because, you told me, hey, you should not be mixing and matching support library either. Mm-hmm. What about it sounds like right now you're okay with people mixing and matching support library and play service versions. Have you thought of like locking those together as well? Because then you wouldn't have this problem.
There are, I don't know if there's official guidance on which versions of support library work with play services. But we had run into issues in the past where the version that play services had been compiled against was incompatible with what developers were using. And so you ran into like a, was this like a base save state failure? Yeah.
It seems like you want to, whatever play services was using is what you should be using as well, right? It seems like they ought to all be, you can't have the same number probably at this point, but it seems like we should have some sort of check that makes sure that they're consistent.
You want Mr. Limp Roll?
Yes. Well, I mean, like, we already have one for those two separate cases, and this seems like a third case, you know, of catching some sort of mismatch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the trouble is also is that we have different release cadences, so, like, there's going to be that time in between where we might be ahead, and we don't want to force developers to not use our new version because GMS, our play services, is forcing you to use an old version.
Seems like the two companies... work together. Wait, it's one company. We should be able to release together, right?
One big company.
Yeah.
Yes.
Happy company.
Yep. Okay. So back to the person I used to work with in a long ago former life would say pop pop pop. So let's pop the stack. So back to version stuff. So that was 24.2, I think, was when we refactors for Min SDK 9, right?
It was whatever we released immediately after IO. 24 was IO, 24.2 would have been a couple months later.
Yeah, in the summer.
4 months later.
Anyway, so there are a couple important things about that for me, you know, app developer that I am. One was that we got rid of, you know, some stuff. We refactored, we cleaned up some stuff. We got rid of old cruf that, frankly, nobody needed anymore. And we bumped it up to a level that was appropriate. It was, you know, Gingerbread. There are still a couple of apps out there that are dependent on Gingerbread, so we didn't want to make their life too painful. Mm-hmm. The other part that was interesting to me was it set a precedent that this can now happen, right? Because this had never happened before. We never had a Min SDK requirement for support except V4. Right? but now, we bumped it forward, and I would expect that this can then happen in the future again, you know, because, again, cruft will collect. If we have all this Gingerbread stuff in there that nobody needs anymore, then why are we dragging it around in the bits that people are downloading?
Right. I mean, you want to talk about all the pros of actually bumping it? Because, I mean, obviously there's a con for people who were using it.
Yeah. I mean, we can start with the con. The con for a developer that's trying to target V4 is now you have to target V9. But realistically, right now...
Or stay with the current version that you were using before.
Or you're stuck on a support lib version, which means you're stuck with maybe certain bugs. Yeah. But V4 is, V4 to V9 is what, like 0.5%, way less than a percent of devices with Play Store.
Well, the latest dashboards come out yesterday, and Freo is finally gone. The Gingerbread is now the smallest API level on the significantly.
Even the dashboard doesn't support it anymore.
Yeah.
So we made the right decision.
Definitely.
We foreseen this.
And even those apps that were out there, like, that doesn't mean the apps are actually still being maintained or built, right?
Yeah, the other important thing for developers to realize is that you can pin, because I think a lot of developers at this point have moved to API 14, API 19 as their Min SDK, and some of them are still supporting older devices by just pinning their APK for these older devices. So when I was working on TalkBack, we cut support for... like API less than 8, and we just kept a version of support of TalkBack on Play Store, so that devices that were never getting updated could still download it.
Right. Yeah. So there's always that mitigation because we still have these things. It doesn't mean that we're removing the old versions. You should use that older version if you are stuck building for those releases for some reason.
Yeah. But the advantages internally, our advantages are, Chris, I think you've had to deal with a lot of exciting workarounds for older platform behavior.
Yeah, lots of stuff around animations.
I mean, this is one of the reasons, like, we tried really hard to push it past SDK 9, right? Up to 14 would be convenient.
Coincidentally.
I think, sure, it makes your lives easier. But I thought that the big payoff was that apps where all this code is inline, all the compatibility code that no one is needing is still ending up in your APKs, right? Mm-hmm. So like this actually makes everyone's app smaller by doing this.
Yeah, so there's code that is not currently ProGuarded out, that's dead code that's going to end up in your app. So if you're targeting API 19, and we get this question fairly often, which is like, if my app is targeting API 21, why do I need to use the support library? It's carrying all this cruft for API 4 through 21. Dropping the API level means that without having to worry about ProGuard stripping things, we've dropped a huge amount of code.
I think it also allows us to add more functionality then for things like animations. Like there are certain capabilities that we can't really add to the support library API because there's not really a way to easily support it across these wide gaps in versions, right?
Yeah, there's some awkward situations where animations are a big one where whatever we're creating that's new, if we have to support API 4, then we're restricted to only using certain platform APIs or creating a completely parallel re-implementation that we can use. In AppCompat, we have a fair amount of complete re-implementations of things.
Yeah, especially on drawables, anything. It tends to be usually UI stuff because it moves so fast. Mm-hmm. We have complete re-implementations of pretty much everything. Toolbar, action bar, pop-up menu, dialogues. You name it, we've probably got a re-implementation in AppCompat. Which also makes our lives harder because as the platform moves forward, we also have to keep those up to date. And so I tend to have a task pretty much just before every platform release where I just go and kind of grok what's changed and then try and copy it in, which is a bit of boiler work, but it's what I have to do.
So you're saying the support library is a fork of AOSP?
I mean, you may say that, Jeff.
it's the dream. It's unbundled UI toolkit.
Okay.
But one of the other big benefits for us moving forward is tools like method counts. Like method counts are such a big issue with Android, and like you can only reference, unless you use Multidex, you can only reference 64K methods. And for every method we add to Compat, so for instance, I don't know, viewCompat is attached to window. That tends to bring along about 5 or 6 methods for every single one. Just because the way we have to architect internally, where we have like internal implementation classes and they forward themselves to static methods which do the actual call on the API level. So you tend to bring about 5 or 6 methods per method in a Compat class. And if you think about how many Compat methods there are in the Compat library, you're talking, a couple of hundred, maybe torching 1,000. So times that by 6 or 5 or 6, you know, you bring along a lot of methods there.
Have you considered making different versions of the Compat library with different min SDKs so that, you know, a developer who has min SDK 19 could get the V19 equivalent of AppCompat, which only has backports for the stuff you're missing from 19 instead of pulling in everything from Gingerbread?
The maintenance overhead for that would be insane. You know, one of the great things about dropping support for API less than 9 is that the maintenance overhead for us became a lot less. And so we're able to, you know, for the number of engineers that we have, we're spending much less of our time on, you know, platforms that developers don't care about, but we're also spending a lot less of our time on just maintaining code. So if you split it up into 4 different implementations, you're going to have to do 4 times as much maintenance work.
Since you've learned Groovy now, I was imagining that the way this would work is that it was all one big code base. But you know, from what I've seen in the AppCompat class, there's just a bunch of different shims, right, for each API level. Mm. And so if you could just basically at a packaging level generate, like, you know, for loop, generate different version where you are culling out classes based on the API level, maybe no more work for Chris, just more work for you.
At that point, it looks a lot like just stripping all code that's protected by a build version check.
Yep, exactly.
Which is something that I would strongly prefer that a tool do at compile time rather than us having to create our own infrastructure for that. And that I think that's something that really belongs in ProGuard.
I think this just became a debate. Chris and I will just sit back and watch. Go.
Maybe that is something that could be added to Jack. Like Jack has its own resource stripping now.
Maybe Studio could do that. Yeah, could we have Lint do...
Yeah, it all could. There's just more code you're dragging around, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, so sure, when you ship that final APK, we will run ProGuard and you might lose this code, which is good for you, right? But you're going to hit those 64K method limit bugs during development. right? If you have need lots of methods and you don't really need the support library to be so large, this could potentially be an improvement.
No, we agree. Like, the support library at the moment, I was looking at stats the other day. I mean, Compat is 9,000 methods you're dragging around.
That's a lot.
It is. And if you add design library, because that has a whole tree of dependencies, except brings in recycler view, which brings in, well, and also it brings in app compat, which brings in compat and fragment, all the others. I think you're talking 19,000 methods.
All right. And then add in place services. What are we?
I mean, I don't know. But I...
So, you know, we're probably spending half the budget.
So what if we just wrote fewer but much longer methods? I mean, if you've looked at some of the methods in like Vue, and view root and window manager, like huge, huge methods.
Are they the ones that you created?
No comment.
So there's actually, there's a lot of boilerplate code in support library right now that was around because of the way that our build was structured. So previously we had been building, our make build had separate modules that compiled against different SDK versions. Our Gradle build did sort of the same thing. And recently, I think this is in, as early as 25.1, we simplified our Gradle build so that now we have many, many fewer studio modules, and we're using lint API checks to ensure that we're not calling the wrong methods on the wrong versions. What this is going to allow us to do is collapse all of the code that we have that used to be in separate class files with separate methods with a bunch of interface code making everything work together. This will let us drop a lot of methods as well.
Yeah, that particular scenario with the make source folders was horrible because we'd hit issues where you couldn't have circular dependencies between source folders. So you have to create all this, and it was like stacked down basically. So you'd have to have all this kind of weird implementation stuff at the bottom, and then you'd have to like pass around stuff. It was just horrible. You'd end up just wasting methods and code.
Yeah, I mean, I think the excitement for me in all this is that it used to be that the support library was built through make files and all kinds of crazy stuff. And as I understood it, you guys couldn't really use Android Studio. You were using IntelliJ plus make file class path. And so a lot of stuff wasn't working. And now I think you're able to use Studio.
Yeah, the Studio build is...
It's pretty awesome. The people that work on support library can just work in that project
instead
of the entire tree.
We can right click and run a test.
Yeah. Yes.
Mind blown.
Yeah, lint runs on all of the code and everything. Yeah. And so a lot of that stuff... You know, it's just happy for us, right, to have, you know, proper tools. Because the framework people are still not in that situation, right? You know, for them, it's just code.
Chet handed down, when I joined the team, Chet handed down an IntelliJ project config for the framework. And I have handed that down to new hires.
And I got
Andrew.ipr?
From Roma. It all started from one sort of primordial project file.
And it sort of works.
Yeah.
But we're at the point with support library where I don't think we even have errant red lines. Everything just works.
It just works. I mean, my favorite thing is the fact that I can debug tests now. I can actually run a test, and if it fails, I can actually step through it and actually work out what is the issue. It's like, changed my life.
Awesome. Yes.
Yay. So we talked about a lot about sort of, you know, internals and releases and versions and the gnarly bits of getting this thing out there. What about actual functionality? So like recent stuff that's gone out that you can say more about? Like we talked about some of it recently. We were talking about sort of what's newish stuff, but you're the people actually working on that.
I mean, over the past sort of year or two, we've been unofficially kind of like, not in feature freeze, but we've been especially concentrating on bugs.
Yeah.
Like we've had... I mean, I'm sure people who use the support library know that we tend to introduce a lot of bugs in releases, and we've been really trying to step up both sort of process with Alan, but also just our focus on fixing things and testing as well. Actually, our test coverage is I mean, I don't know about the actual coverage percentage, but we have a lot more tests on stuff, and so that's the stuff we've been focusing on. And new functionality anyway has kind of sort of been on the back burner. Some of the stuff that comes off the top of my head, bottom navigation view.
Yep.
Acompat hasn't had much design library. The only thing I can think of is bottom navigation view. You think?
I've been watching a lot of Chet's talks, and so I've been focusing a lot on process. I can tell you all about our process.
Excellent. So glad you learned what you should have out of those.
Well, do you want to talk about the new EXIF library?
It exists.
Okay, so well, the I new can EXIF say a few words if you want.
So the new EXIF library is... was requested. It's one of the more highly starred issues on the AOSP issue tracker, which is a thing that we do actually look at.
I should point out that actually you two, more than anybody else on the team, I think, actually troll the external tracker.
Did you say troll?
Troll.
They troll it.
Patrol. Yeah, obviously.
Patrol
it.
I think both words fit, actually.
Yeah.
Because that is the front line where a lot of the issues will get posted for that, as opposed to like a lot of the rest of us depend on internal bugs that get circulated. But I think a lot of the support library stuff actually comes from there. So. Mm-hmm. I just want to give credit where credit is due. So go.
Yeah, so the EXIF interface library was highly requested, and what landed in support library is basically the exact same code that lives outside that lives in the framework.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, the EXIF library, which is a library to read like camera metadata, I think, was basically wrapping a native library which had massive security bugs in it. And you know, some of those won't be fixed by so many factors because it goes back to old versions. And so what people were requesting was a port that didn't have those issues so that you in your app can switch to this other library so that you don't rely on what's on the phone. You have your own version of it, which is a Java port, as I understand it.
Yeah.
And it's API compatible. You just change the package name and everything else works. All the constants, all the APIs, it's you know, a drop-in replacement, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So if you were using the framework version of EXIF interface, I think the one that landed is functionally identical to the one that was in N. And it's going to continue to be updated. So, you know, your end device, if something is added to EXIF, you pull in the new support library, you know, V30, and now you have all these new features.
Yeah. So we added the lint check as well, that if you aren't using this one, we want you to, because... You know, your like whether you have bugs or not, it's better for your users of your app to not be using the EXIF library, the native one, on their old devices.
It's an interesting movement overall in the last couple of years that I think as the platform has gotten more mature, we have all these capabilities sort of built in that we can depend on now, and we can put in some huge capabilities in the support library that just depend on existing stuff in the platform. And so we're no longer in the state where all new stuff has to be in framework. Now, we may want to add it to the framework anyway because, you know, long term we may as well put it in a way that's, you know, there for everybody to share from, that everybody's not, you know, building into their app individually. But at the same time, we go ahead and add it to support libraries that people can actually use the capability now. I'm thinking like the EXIF is a good example. So, yeah, we'll fix the bugs in the framework. And now we also have this thing in support libraries, so people will just use that instead. We did
yeah,
the same
and by
thing
having with, it broken out as opposed to the right. old support V4. Like, if you want it, use it. If not, there's right. no cost to you.
Right.
This one's actually pretty small. I think it's like one class. It's not some massive thing to add.
There was a small API service added for IME interaction stuff. I think it was inline image copy
images,
stuff.
Yeah.
Where they added it to the framework because that is clearly a platform capability you want. And then, by the way, we also put the same capability with a slightly different API as necessary.
To a certain extent, we get lucky in some situations where we had the forethought in the framework to make it flexible enough to do whatever it is that we need to do in the support lib to backport a feature. And for Vue, so many views are the behavior is self-contained. Like, there are no private APIs or like deep down framework internals that we need to touch to implement views. So everything can happen in design lib pretty easily. Right. You know, there are some animation things that are a bit sticky with material for design lib, but for the most part, all of that can be standalone.
Yeah, especially, I mean, the API that's saved Acompat V21 was layout inflator factory. The fact that I could actually hook into inflation and like basically add Acompat's own little implementation of widgets. So, for instance, if you're using an edit text, if you actually look it in Hierarchy Viewer or Layout Inspector in Android Studio, you'll see that the actual class you're using is actually Acompat edit text. Like, we actually inflate and like give you our implementations, and that allows us to backport certain things for you. For instance, like drobble tinting and all sorts of other fun stuff. But yeah, like that API was added in API 1. I think that was there from the dawn of time. And so that API has allowed us to do this all the way back. And it works across all the different API levels.
Or like the transition stuff that hit in, I don't know what that was, 24.2 or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think, so that has a higher min SDK because it is going to depend on framework animations.
Mm-hmm.
But the transitions API hit framework in KitKat, whereas the backport people can use back to ICS because the fundamentals that it depends on, there were a couple of small things added to work around some artifacts that can pop up, but the fundamentals were there for a while. So yeah, why not add the stuff back there where people can use it?
Yeah. Then we had the opposite situation with drawable.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
So
you're all sighing. Drawable. So what's the issue there? That it doesn't give you all the hooks you need?
Yeah.
Well, there is no way to sort of inject any sort of custom drawable code.
Was.
But there's no way to run drawable custom code before N, right?
Before N.
Yeah. So you get your, unless you dynamically, you like create them in code, like from resources. You can't like reference a custom drawable class in resources like you can with a view. So if you're creating a layout, you can like reference a custom class. So, I don't know, android.example.myview. And that works all the way back to IPR1, but you can't do the same thing with drawables or any other resource, actually.
Yeah, color state lists. So backporting a feature in color state list is technically, I guess, we can do it because we have some resource override stuff now, but that's basically like dark magic.
Yeah, it's dark magic. It's, I don't like, but it's just what we have to do. Basically, we have to re-implement everything. We have to override and like reset things to actually make sure it works.
We have to be real careful about what's public API and what's guaranteed behavior because there are really nasty things you can do to implement this. Like you can reflect on the resources, the drawable cache, and really do whatever you want. But there's no guarantee. There are no CTS guarantees. There are no API guarantees around that. So it's not something that we can do.
Okay. So with all these restrictions, then how did vector drawable and animated vector drawable get backported in the support library?
That kind of happened in two steps. So the first step was what Tengui on Chet's team created, which is the actual implementation of vector drawable and animated vector drawable. So they actually work. Like you can actually create one in code and you know you can set them on an image view and they just work. And that took a lot of work both with AAPT and also with just generally actually creating the view, drawable class, sorry. And so the reason why there was a lot of work in AAPT is that because AAPT does a lot of automatic moving of your resources. So for instance, if you're referencing an attribute which was added in, say, API 19, and you set that in your, I don't know, whatever, your layout, and your Monista case 14, AAPT will automatically move that layout to a dash V19 folder. And so it does that automatically for you so that when your app actually runs on V14, it doesn't crash because it can't find the attribute. And so obviously a lot of the attributes in vector drawable were added specifically for in V21. And so that we had to do a lot of work in APT to actually sort of disable that. And so you can actually reference those attributes like before V21, and APT doesn't actually just move them. So that's the work with, that's the first step, like actually getting it to sort of be a valid drawable. The second step was in App Compat to sort of allow it to work automatically. And lots of dark magic happened there, which I'm still scared to talk about. I mean, there's two sides to it. The first is that we have a new attribute on image view now called source compat, which allows you to reference a vector drawable or an animated vector drawable, whichever. And it will use the specific library and it just works. But that only works, obviously, for image view. Like if you want to set it on a text view, like as a compound drawable, or I don't know, wherever you want to set it, that doesn't work because we can't add attributes for every single class, every single place you might use a drawable. It's just impossible. So we have, for better terms, a kind of hack where we have this kind of dodgy resource loading where we can kind of intercept where you're going to use a vector drawable and we can do some custom inflation for you. It doesn't work in every instance and it also adds certain resource problems. Which is why it's turned off by default. There's an API on App Compat Delegate called Set Compat. I can't remember what the method's called. But it's on App Compat Delegate. If you want to turn it on, the Java doc on that method tells you all the issues. yeah, I mean, I wouldn't recommend people using it, but if you have a specific need where you know you need a vector drawable in a specific place, you can use it.
So when I'm using App Compat, you will automatically translate my text views and buttons and things into corresponding App Compat versions of those,
yes.
Right? Do all of those classes correctly implement the source compat attribute? So can I use this stuff in layout XML?
Source compact is only on image view. So like text view has compound drawable left, compound drawable right, top button, start right. So that's just on text view. So there you got six.
But I mean, you can define any attribute you want on any widget. It's just not going to be read by its inflator.
Of course, yes. But you have to do that for every view. Like, it's just,
but it's just your view. So I'm just asking your app compat delegate classes, do they look for it or no?
Not currently. Only image view does.
Okay.
The reason why there comes a point where the amount of work we have to do, I mean, every time we add a new attribute, that's extra overload that a developer has to know. Like, they have to know to not use drawable Android drawable left, and they have to know to use app drawable left.
Yeah, or they should just use lint, which I think has a check for this.
It does for image view, yeah. Yes. But even so, it's still overhead that we have to, number one, we have to implement at the start.
Yeah, at runtime, you'd have to go look up extra attributes that maybe are never used. So yeah,
exactly.
So when you said earlier, you said, I wouldn't recommend people use it, but if you need it, it's there. What did you mean by it? Like vector drawable and animated vector drawable actually work.
The resource hack.
Okay. So by code, if you're declaring and using them from code, like all of that stuff is solid. It's more the resource access of it can be tricky.
Yeah, sorry. I should have made that.
Okay.
Vector drawable is very good.
I'm still not fully understanding. So if I'm building an app and I'm using app compat, which is our current recommended practice, quick aside on that, we used to, when you make a new project in Studio, we would only put app compat in if your min SDK was lower than some number, because we thought, well, that's when you need it. But then, of course, the problem was you make this project now, and a year from now, when app compat is backporting some new feature, you're extending activity, not app compat activity, and so then you have all this work to do. So for now, we're always giving app compat, even if your min SDK is 25, because 2 years from now, you'll be happy that you have it. Anyway, so I'm using app compat, and I'm using resources for layouts, and I want to use vectors, right? Because they're smaller and, you know, resolution independent, all that stuff. Can I sprinkle vector icons into my app, or is it only for image views? Or am I supposed to do this through code? Am I supposed to do find view by ID and set it? What do you want me to do?
So it depends. Like, if you want to turn on vector, so there's support vector drawables. I can't remember what the standard is, but it's a Gradle standard where you can turn on support vectors. If you turn that on, that disables the Android Gradle plugin's automatic rasterization of vectors, which for the majority of places, that's a good solution, I'd say. The only downside to it is that you don't get animated vector drawables. It's obviously because you're converting vectors to raster.
You're saying if you get the Gradle bitmap built.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so the Gradle plugin will rasterize you into it.
Yeah, the big other disadvantage of that solution, which I hear about it quite a bit now, is that it doesn't resolve resources, right? So it's great when your vectors are one color. The second you start trying to put resources in there, like night mode, for example, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I guess tint wouldn't work.
Yeah, yeah.
And so yeah, if you turn it on, that disables all of that in the Gradle plugin, which means that your app is left to its own devices, and app compat is then doing the vector drawable sort of inflation for you. And so what I said earlier, if you turn on that resource implementation via app compat delegate, it will try. I mean, your vectors will work in the majority of places.
Okay.
You can just use them.
Okay.
But there are issues around it before API 21.
So I should actually look at the app, run, and see if it works.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Turns out you should test your app a bit before you ship it. Just sort of a general process.
Support like app compat generally will go right through to the native implementation when possible, right? So I shouldn't test this on my end device, right? I probably need to get something pre-21 or... Or do we always run the app compat stuff?
No, it depends. I know it's.
I think we have a show title actually for this one.
It depends.
Yeah, either that or Blackmagic.
So for vector drawable specifically, the vector drawable compat will delegate to the platform implementation. It depends on the version you're using. So if you're using 25.1, it will only delegate to the framework implementation on V24 and above.
The reason for that is we keep fixing bugs in vector drawable, and it's nice to not have to worry about where your comma is in an XML file.
Yeah, I agree.
It depends.
Okay.
If we can just delegate to the framework, we will. Because obviously tends to be the most optimal route. But if we have to work around something or fix something, we will use our implementation.
Okay.
All right. I'm all out of questions.
Were there any other new changes in support library that you want to cover? Since our last discussions, right? So you can go back, you can dig into 24 if there are any big things there. You mentioned the transitions backport. I think we've already talked about that maybe because, you know, it's near and dear to your heart. Is there any other backports or improvements to the support library?
For me, lately, night mode has been the biggest pain.
Where are we with night mode?
So night mode works. It's just there are certain issues around it when certain views are inflated. So like night mode as it works currently is that it sort of it forces your app to use the dash night and dash not night resource qualifiers, which is exactly how the framework sort of implements it. And it's how theme.appcompat.daynight is actually implemented. It's just two theme declarations, one in dash night and one in just default.
So if I want to add night mode to my app, what do I do?
So you change your theme of your app to extend theme.appcompat.daynight. Mm-hmm. And then there's one call, appcompatdelegate.setDefaultNightMode, and you give it whatever night mode you want to use. Either auto, which like, changes based on the time of day, or yes or no, which forces dark or light, not respectively.
Okay, and I could make that a setting as well and just sort of read it from... Okay, cool. So I wish more apps would do that.
I mean, there's a lot of apps to do. It tends to be social apps like Reddit, those type of apps. Twitter as well now, actually. Twitter has a toggle.
Content reading apps.
Yeah. Apps you're likely to... you know, basically pull up in bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the way that works internally is that we update the configuration object on activity, and that's what forces the system to use dash night and dash not night.
Okay.
The issue we've had actually recently is that as soon as you use a web view, the system will kind of refresh all the configuration objects, and that wipes out our night mode. So we're still trying to work out how to actually fix it.
So you're saying that if I have web views in my layouts, there's mixing day night and that.
Yeah, you'll have this weird checkerboard effect where some will be night, some will be light.
I'm hearing a lint check.
Well, a lint check actually sounds quite hard because that would be anywhere. You'd have to work out what activity the.
Well, is it common for people to do night mode in only parts of the app? Because what I'm thinking is if your app is using web views and using day-night mode, that seems like you should be aware of this issue because probably a lot of people don't know that.
No, I mean, we hope to work around it, honestly. It's just something I hit the other day and I've been trying to fix it. So I will let you know, Tor.
All right.
Web view and night mode is an interesting situation anyway because if you're displaying your own content, you have control over whether it's light on dark or dark on light. But if you're displaying arbitrary HTML content that you don't own the styles for, trying to say that your app is going to be in dark theme and your web content is going to be something.
Yeah, it seems tricky whenever you have some sort of container of content. I mean, do you expect if you're watching a video, do you expect that content to be dimmed? Probably not, right? So it's not clear. In fact, what happens with web views and app compat? Do you try to apply any other styling to buttons and widgets in that content?
No.
Or that's sort of, it's native, it's doing its own stuff?
Yeah, we don't want to mess around with that. Yeah. It's the web.
Seems fair.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the only view we don't try and sort of reach into.
Okay.
Just let it do its thing.
All right. So, yeah. Any other recent features or?
I can't think of any.
All I can think of is Gradle targets. Man, we have some great Gradle targets, though.
Our build has actually got a lot quicker. I think we can build now in, I think it's 90 seconds, something like that.
Is this because of Gradle, or is this because of continued cleanup of stuff that we didn't need to be doing?
It's the stuff that Alan was mentioning earlier, where we have a lot less modules now, whereas we were kind of tied to the old make build, so we'd have separate modules, and that kind of carried over to Gradle. But now we use Lint to actually enforce the API calls. We now have a lot less modules. I think it's 11 or 12, and it's just a hell of a lot quicker. And actually works in Android Studio.
I was thinking back to earlier when we talked about splitting up like V4 into several sub things. So to get the benefits from doing this, just to be clear, you should actually be loading those submodules instead. But to keep from breaking applications, we kept the old one. I think this was your suggestion, Chris. Like, we have basically this meta thing that you can still have the same library name, whatever it was called, V4 support.
Yeah. Support V4.
Support V4. You can still use that, but if you do that, we're dragging in everything just like we used to.
Yeah, V4 is just a shell now that points to compat utils,
UI,
a couple other libraries,
media.
And that one just depends on everything else.
Yeah, and I guess if you're migrating from V4 to trying to break up and use more targeted dependencies, I don't know if there's a better way than just picking a handful and seeing if it still compiles.
Yeah, I actually been thinking about adding tooling for that, because it seems like, A, you should be able to refactor and just say, hey, analyze my project, figure out what I'm using, and then, you know, based on that, subtract down to just the individual atoms. I guess atom is not a good term, since like that could be like instant app, right? But I mean the individual, what do you call the small leaf, leaf libraries? And it seems the other thing I would like us to do is that when you get an import error, you know, you're typing in some class name. When we suggest the import, we should also check if you have it and offer to add that library for you. So you don't have to go figuring out which specific leaf library you need. So hopefully those two things will appear in some future version of Studio.
I like that.
It's not done yet, so that's not code for next version, but you know, that's something we're thinking about.
Given that our Gradle, call them leaf modules, the package names don't the package names are all Android support V4, and they don't correspond to the Gradle module that you need to be pulling in. It can be a little mysterious where a class needs to be coming from unless you have that sort of automatic.
Yeah, and it's very easy for the tools to check. We'll just look at all the class files. That's a quick lookup for the support libraries. We can't do it for any arbitrary, you know, JCenter, Maven Central class, but certainly the support library is easy.
Android Studio just DDoS in JCenter.
Actually, we have some support for that. So there is a disabled by default lint check, which will go and see if all your dependencies are up to date. That actually will hit search. It'll search .maven.central or whatever the URL for that, or JCenter. They both have APIs for looking up version information. And we're also using that from the new project structure dialog, you know, where you can sort of search for dependencies and we'll check. It's off by default, but also something we're working on.
Yeah, I've been using that lately. Yeah. Well, I can't be bothered to open like maven.central.
Yes.
I'll just use Studio. It's great.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
I guess we're running out of steam.
I think that's it. Any last words? Anything you've been saving up for your entire life that you'd like to tell people now?
They're saving it for appearance number 4.
Okay. So just to keep you in suspense, we'll stop it here then. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.